Just to give you fine listeners a little peek behind the curtain without revealing too much of how the sausage is made, we recorded most of these early episodes dark, well before we even knew if we would eventually release this podcast to the general public. We had banked a backlog of somewhere around 17 episodes before we launched, and this is only our third episode, not counting episode zero, so we recorded this one a really long time ago. How long ago? Well, this was our first crack at recording remotely when the pandemic finally hit us here in Pittsburgh, so March, I guess? Ah, the halcyon days of February 2020, when we anticipated getting together, Shaggy, Lauren, Chris, and I, to drink some booze and talk horror cinema, maybe sometimes we'd even watch the movies together. Oh, how innocent we were in our youthful naivete. We had no way of knowing then that we would find ourselves still isolating in mid-October with no end in sight. A couple of things you might notice on this episode as we stumble our way through a whole new recording platform, having had to abandon the sweet in-home setup Chris was putting together. First thing being that Shaggy's sound quality sucks. You may have noticed on the Scream intro that he sounded like he was coming to you live from the bottom of the river while suffocating on a half a roll of bubble wrap. Get used to that for the foreseeable future. It's just going to be his aesthetic for a while. The second thing you will notice is that the passage of time since we recorded this episode is not the only reason I have very little memory of recording it. The sauce was free-flowing here at the Masick House back in the beginning of quarantine, and not having to drive myself home was obviously a freedom I was not fully prepared for. So I can't speak with much authority on the episode you're about to hear, though I have been assured by people I trust that I was in fact present for its recording. Up to this point, I had only done renditions of Drunk History from my close family and friends, but I believe this will constitute my first public performance. I also can't speak with authority on what structural gymnastics Chris had to undertake to put together a usable episode. What I am certain of is that my friends are saints for putting up with my antics, and also that you, dear listener, are either going to love this episode or hate it. Lastly, I know in this episode we discuss the classic Audrey Hepburn film Wait Until Dark, the big screen adaptation of the smash hit stage play that earned Ms. Hepburn the last of her Academy Award nominations. She had gone through quite a run at the Oscars, being nominated 5 times for Best Actress in a 14-year period, though she only came away with the win for her first nomination in Roman Holiday. We also get a frighteningly psychopathic performance from Alan Arkin, who was not recognized for his role in this film, though he would go on to finally get his own Oscar nearly 40 years later for Little Miss Sunshine. This movie did leave us with a lot of questions, though. What is the difference between a horror film and a thriller? And just how shitty a husband did you have to be in the 60s to actually be considered a bad husband? Apparently you could give your wife less respect than the criminals trying to murder her and still come away smelling like roses. You can decide all those answers for yourself. Just remember, if you're going to drink along with us at home, please don't try to keep up with me on this one. Pour yourself the beverage of your choice, pull up a bar stool, and try not to fall out of it. As we discuss the 1967 Terrence Young-directed thriller, Wait Until Dark. Welcome to Fright Pub. Welcome to Fright Pub, everybody.
Woo, here we are.
An intoxicating horror movie podcast. I am one of your three hosts, Liam Masick.
I'm Lauren Connolly.
My name's Shaggy. I'm here for comic relief, you fuckers.
Excellent. So, start. What is everybody drinking tonight?
I'm having a mimosa, but I also poured. Smart. Yes, it's orange juice, but instead of champagne, I put in Everclear.
Oh, yes.
That way it's, you know, classy, like Audrey Hepburn.
You're my hero.
Also is filled with gasoline, which is also a movie reference to Wait Until Dark.
I wanted to go get some Penn Dark to drink for Wait Until Dark. I felt like that would have been appropriate, but instead, with the quarantine in effect, I'm drinking some Ginzer American Gin from Lawrenceville nice. Distilling, keeping it hometown proud. So I'm having some comically large gin and tonics while we do this.
Excellent. I'm drinking Bell's Two Hearted Ale because fuck themes. I drink what I want.
That's right.
Juice.
I'm sure we could figure out a theme to tie in with the Two Hearted Ale somewhere.
Probably.
Like how Sam Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. and Audrey Hepburn have absolutely no chemistry and their two hearts are wildly separate from one another.
No chemistry. Are you talking about really no chemistry?
I hated Sam.
No, yes, yeah, Sam sucks, but that relationship is so fucking interesting and way more interesting than the clown car show that I saw from these con men. Like, man. Like, oh, I'm an old man. I'm the young man's son. Like, fucking, and literally, we found out that he was the criminal because of his squeaky shoes. How much more of a fucking clown can you be?
Like, well,
they worked really hard to con this blind woman.
They could have just walked in and be like, hey, what's up? Listen, you got that doll? Because if you don't, I mean, your husband's away for hours. We'll just beat the shit out of you and no one will hear you while it happens until you give us this doll. How's that sound? That's what we could have saved 2 hours of time. They did a whole song and dance number. I felt like there was an intermission for them.
Well, I mean, it was based on a play, right? So maybe
Yes, it was. This is a play that is seldom performed because it mandates that there's no lights on the theater at the time, which is against current codes.
Gross.
So, exit signs have to be covered up and aisle lighting, like no lights in the theater during this movie during this play.
I feel like I want to blow my load early here.
Okay, do it.
I'm just going
to. I'm ready. Well, my mouth is open. My tongue is eagerly waiting.
I mean, I kind of want to know, I kind of want to know who added this to the list and why, though, before we.
So, before really we jump in, I did.
It was me. I put
it was
this.
Me. So, this is. I remember the first time I saw this. This is one of the movies that my parents showed me as a kid. We went on a little bit of a spree with Audrey Hepburn movies because, let's see, when did Audrey Hepburn pass away? It was in the early 90s, like 91?
93. I was doing some looking it up last night.
You. So 1993, Audrey Hepburn passed away. And I remember seeing the news on TV and my parents were like, we should go rent some Audrey Hepburn movies. And they really wanted to show us Wait Until Dark. But this was in a strange early 90s period of time when, first of all, everybody watched the news. Everybody cared when a classic film actor died. And everybody rented movies from their local video store. So we went around to three different video stores trying to find Wait Until Dark. And everybody was out of it. Like an hour after this news aired on the television. And so we ended up watching Charade instead. So which was another great, it's not on the list. Doesn't belong in the list. But it was a great comedic thriller.
At this point.
Who's to say? It's a comedic thriller. It's a romantic comedy with some Hitchcock-esque leanings, but it's Audrey Hepburn and Cary Grant. If you haven't seen it, you should. There's a Criterion Collection release of it. It's fantastic. So we watched that, and then a couple weeks later, they finally got a hold of Wait Until Dark, and it had me on the edge of my seat the whole time when I was 11. And yeah, since then, I've only watched it a couple of times, but it's still when I watched it this time, it's still one of my favorites, still some of the best, one of the best jump scares and gasp moments that I've seen in any film. So that's why I added it to the list.
Very cool. No, I appreciate it. So you had seen it before. I had never seen it before. Shaggy, had you seen it?
Liam showed it to me.
Okay.
Because I'm a good friend.
Yeah. Hey, where were you being my friend?
You weren't at Catawba at the time yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this was freshman year because I showed it to him on VHS.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. That was before we beat the hell out of the VHS player.
Yes, we did. That's a story for another time, though, because we only have an hour because somebody needs to go to bed.
Well, I mean, he also is drinking Everclear, so that could also be one of the part of the reasons why he's going to be.
You know what? If he's drinking Everclear at 10:30, he's not going to know what time it is.
That's true.
So, little peek behind the curtain. This is our first remote podcast recording, though. So, this is a moment in history for us.
Yes, because we want to keep things going during these quarantine times.
Yeah, we got the Rona is upon us.
So we can use this opportunity to try to crank some episodes out.
Be productive. Excuse me.
Like,
yeah, I almost had the Rona. I thought I had the Rona, but my test came back negative. So
woo!
I just have a random other respiratory infection virus that leaves me short of breath and with a nasty ass cough, but is not COVID-19.
Yay.
Humble brag. So anyway, back to the point. Shaggy, you were starting off saying that you did not approve of the clown show.
Yeah, you have some feelings.
I'd like to put something up. I mean, it's not that I don't approve of the clown show. First of all, one of the things that struck me the most about this movie is how much I hated something immediately and how much they immediately made me love it. And that made me hate them too. So,
ooh, I love it. Keep going.
It was kind of like I fucking hated Sam because Sam was like, yes, yes, Audrey Hepburn, I don't have time for you right now. Yes, yes. Like, fuck you. He kind of treats his blind wife a little bit like shit, and then like I'm immediately sucked into their relationship in general, mainly because like, all right, he's kind of an average dude. Like, he kind of sucks. Like, kind of sucking is the average for dudes. They all kind of suck. You could have a wife like Audrey fucking Hepburn saying things like, I'll be whatever you want me to be. And then your answer is, I just want you to be Susan. That's fine. That's, you are Susan, that's what you should be. And that's a very average suck-ass response to that, to Audrey Hepburn telling you she'll be whatever you want her to be. So, yeah, that dude's kind of average. Fine, whatever. These con men, way over the top. I don't understand. When we first meet these dudes, they've got razor blades and brass knuckles ready to fuck up anything that happens. And then they're like, you know what we should do? We should convince her husband is cheating on her with someone that was recently murdered for a doll that we need to help her find because it's filled with heroin. I feel like these people live in a different universe than like normal drug dealers that are like, yeah, dude, she's got the heroin. Yeah, let's go kill her. Yeah, absolutely. If we find it, we find it. If we don't, that's fine. We'll just wait for somebody else and eventually we'll kill them. And if we don't find it, that sucks. We take the L.
So here's my question for you, Shaggy.
Yeah.
Did you find yourself in a strange position where, like, because I gotta be honest, if you were going to rob heroin, a heroin-filled doll from a blind woman, I feel like this is exactly how you'd go about doing it.
Because I'm not sure.
So right.
Absolutely. You know what? You're absolutely right.
You would have on clown shoes and old age makeup.
And you'd be
talking in every funny voice you could get your hands on.
And that's kind of what I want to talk to you guys about. For like horror.
On to my next point.
Horror.
This was made for you.
You're illustrating my point so well. Absolutely. This was made for me. So horror is meant to evoke a strong feeling of horror. It's not just fear. It's fear laced with like something like gross or a transgression of societal norms like torture porn or serial killer or even the rules of the universe like fucking Eraserhead or something, you know? So, or even maybe it's just a parable of don't go there or something horrible will happen to you. That's horror. Now, a thriller is a little bit of both. Of what suspense is. Suspense evokes fear of the unknown, fear of waiting for that other shoe to drop. You're going to go through the motions of the mundane life. There's no chases. There's no fights. If you do that, then your life has become a thriller. Thrillers are suspense. that are meant to evoke fear, but fear combined with heart-racing adrenaline response. And there might be some supernatural or sci-fi, but the focus is on the real and the physical. A fight, a chase, a threat, right? If the primary emotion driving our protagonist is fear, then great. We've got either a thriller or horror. This is a thriller and not a horror movie, because at no point is it gross. It does not transgress societal norms or anything like that.
I have a counterpoint for you. And that is, if this is a horror movie,
which it isn't,
I think it might be,
but it's not.
And I will.
I'm just here for the fun.
I mean, if your next point relies on the first point being that it is something, which I contend with, then you can't make the second.
No, here's my question. Is, you're thinking of this as a tale that is being told in the year 2020, in which case I agree with you. There are no societal norms that are being broken.
If you're about to reference that it was hippie drug culture that's scaring the normies, then so you're saying this is like Reefer Madness? Then yeah, I agree. That's fine. This is the Reefer Madness of horror movies.
This is the Reefer Madness of horror movies, in that there is
they're in a VW bus. They're obviously junkies, and all hippies are trying to kill us. Yes. Rote, okay. Got it.
Rote, played by Alan Arkin. Brilliantly played by Alan Arkin.
Would you say brilliantly played, or would you?
I would say brilliantly played.
Okay, I think I would too.
Are you guys?
I think I would too. Just knowing Alan Arkin, like everything I've seen him in recently, like
this was back before Alan Arkin was Alan Arkin, so Alan Arkin could play anything that he wanted.
Right. I agree with that. I thought it was well played by Alan Arkin.
I thought he was fantastic, and he is. He is not even a hippie. He's like a proto beatnik, kind of like the heroin beatnik.
Right. Basically, it's for the old folks at home that don't recognize what hippies are yet. So they're like, yeah, that's the thing that does the drugs. Kill it.
Precisely. I think that is the paranoia that it's tapping into,
right,
of the time.
Fair enough.
So that's why I think it's a horror movie. I don't think it translates as a horror movie to today, apart from the horror of trying to put yourself in a position of being a blind person who is being stalked in her own apartment by killers.
So let's talk about that for a second. So like
that basic premise straddles the line between thriller and horror. It's because still, being stalked in your own apartment by killers is a thriller. When you're blind, it's a horror.
I don't think so. And here's why. Like, yeah, okay. There's no parable here, right? There's no like, don't do this, right? Unless it's like, don't leave your blind lady home alone. Like that's not a parable there. Number two, there's nothing gross that happens in this. There's no grossness. There's nothing there. And there's no rules being broken, right? It's just a thriller, and that's fine. This was a very, very good thriller for its time. If your counterpoint to it being a horror movie is that there were societal norms being broken because they were hippies, like
hippies and drugs were, this was an edgy topic for what, 1967?
Okay, but that still doesn't necessarily make it a horror movie just because drug elements and hippies were there. Like, it would have to, like, she didn't die because she intentionally broke rules and dallied with drugs like Reefer Madness. She didn't even do that. So it's not even Reefer Madness.
No, these she were didn't even know this they was were the there. Violence and degradation of society creeping into a normal family's home.
But they're not a normal family.
They kind of are.
he's a photographer that works on a number of things in an apartment in New York City, and she's a blind lady that had a terrible accident and they just got married. Like, they're not a normal family at all. Like, the whole premise is that they're not a normal family. He's away all the time and she's blind at home.
I don't know. There were a few times that I was watching the movie that I was like, oh, I bet this was horrific to viewers in 1967. I think it's just the difference between, like, the way that things have changed, just the way that things have evolved. Like, for example, I feel like that the car, Carlino getting hit by the car and run over multiple times, that probably would have been fairly horrific.
Oh, okay. For sure.
I agree with that point. That is a horrific.
Where it was like watching it, it was kind of like, oh, you know, I couldn't help but think going through, like, what would that look like today? Probably very different. And probably much more.
We would have, like, exploded. We would have seen his face just like on the wheel.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I was kind of thinking about that where it's like, well, that's like 1967, you know, in a little way, like, oh, I wish that could be what horrified us now, because they need to go a lot farther now, unfortunately. But yeah, I feel like that. I kind of found myself thinking, like, what would that have looked like if the movie were made, like, in the past few years?
Well, and not only that, but the point of Rote dragging himself forward, determined to kill her, using the butcher knife to, like, pull himself forward and, like, inch forward like that, that's kind of a grotesque image that is not in any way practical. If you can do that, you can crawl on your hands, you know?
Oh, yeah, good point.
Like, it's added for effect, and it adds this level of menace and grotesque.
Grotesquery.
Yes.
No problem. So,
thank you.
I understand you guys, like, I see those two elements, right, of the 2-hour film, like, and they are good elements, right? But it's still a thriller, not a horror movie.
I think I agree with you, Shaggy. I think it is a thriller with, like, horror elements. Like, it does have certain.
We had a grossness. Instances. You're absolutely right. We had a grossness where that guy got run over. That dude was not covered. He had blood on his face.
And like, multiple times. It's like, once or twice would have done it, buddy, but, like,
right.
Multiple times, forward, back. Like, dude, all right.
Well, and also,
I think you got him.
Not only that, but, like, the look of, like, the O face that he gives when he walks in after stabbing Richard Crenna in the back.
Oh, I didn't notice that, but. Ooh,
like,
yeah,
he looks like he's, like, out of breath in the good way. Oh, man. He even says it, like, all the children have gone to bed and now the adults can talk. Like, he is so ready to talk to somebody who's on his level and to just absolutely destroy her. And he's going to rape her and then kill her. But he couldn't do that.
Because he got stabbed.
Well, he couldn't do that with the norms there.
Well, let's talk about the norms for a second. How long do you think before the divorce happens in that relationship? Because that's, honest to God, like, that was the most interesting part of this entire movie for me was the 5 minutes that I got to see Sam and Audrey Hepburn together, Susie. And because it was like Susie and... That, and this is the thing that upset me so much about the movie, is they would immediately make me hate someone and then immediately make me love them. Like, Sam is problematic immediately because he has a wife like Audrey Hepburn saying, can I come with you, please, to work or anything at all? Dear God, I want to be with you. And all the dudes in the audience are just like, Sam, that's Audrey Hepburn. Turn the fuck around. Sam.
But at the same time, the only way Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. is with Audrey Hepburn is when she's fucking blind.
Well, that's a little rough. It's a little rough.
Fuck that dude. He's too old. He's too square. And he's an asshole. If she thought that she could do any better, she would.
Well, and that's actually why that relationship is so wonderful to watch, because she's so caught up in the fact that she's not. She can't do any better, and she feels like she can't do any better. Because, and I don't know if she forgot what she looked like when she went blind, but like,
she might think she's horribly scarred.
Like, I'm horribly scarred. Is that that's what happened? You know what? That's exactly what happened. Is that he was like, "Excuse me, lady in the accident." She's like, "I'm blind. I can't see." "Oh no, you've been horribly scarred. I'll take care of you."
Dude, there's like, talk about a secondary horror film.
Absolutely. That's the real scary thing that's happening in this movie is their relationship. The other thing I want to talk about is
what came from Zimbalist Jr., who played an amazing part in my childhood and your childhood and everybody's childhood who grew up in the 90s that we never even appreciated. Why? Are you ready?
How do I? I don't. Yes, please.
The man played Alfred fucking Pennyworth in the entire animated Batman series. Well, so here's a question. Are we supposed to hate Sam?
I think we're supposed to not like him a little.
Or do you think a 60s audience was supposed to hate Sam?
No, I don't think a 60s audience was supposed to hate Sam.
I don't think I dislike Sam, to really? Be honest.
Because he was a total douchebag.
I don't dislike him. He's just average. He's just an average dude that doesn't realize
he's worse than average, guys. No,
look, Liam, he's an average dude that doesn't know what he has, which is most dudes in most marriages.
No, I reject this premise from the outset. What I'm saying is he knows what he has, but he's going about it in a douchey, controlling way.
But wasn't that kind? I mean, and maybe I'm totally off the mark here, but wasn't that kind of the norm? I mean,
yeah, that's what 100%. I'm saying is, I feel like in the '60s he was a much better catch than we're seeing him from today. Kind of like Shaggy is approaching this as a horror movie from today's perspective, but not from the '60s. And I'm looking at their relationship from a modern lens, from a '60s lens.
And that's the thing. Like, I'm not going to say I disliked Sam. I'm definitely not going to say I liked him. He was just kind of there for me the whole time. Like, and maybe that's like kind of with what you're saying too, Shaggy, is that like very average. Like, it was just like, okay. And he's a person who's in like 15 minutes of the movie. Like, I didn't really have much of an opinion of him either way.
Yeah, you get a better opinion of him through what Richard Crenna makes up about him and Susie just kind of goes along with. Is that weird that like we like the con man's version of Sam better than
I gloss over that entirely because it's not real.
Oh, see, I didn't like that version of him
because I thought that that like he was making things up about him and Susie was like, nah, shit, that tracks.
Oh, I see what you mean. Like in the army and stuff, and in the
And it's like, oh, he saved my life, and this and that and the other thing, and it's like, oh yeah, we go back a long way, and everything that he said, which while it was a total clown show, the man's a decent con man. Like he read the room real well.
Well, and it's also easy to con Susie. Can we talk about how easy it is to con Susie for a second?
Is it? Because she saw through Rote, like, no problem.
This is a woman who not once ever locked her door. Ever.
Does that make her easy to con?
I agree that to a certain extent, she was easy to con. And that's actually kind of why I appreciate the plot so much. Because it wasn't just like, it wasn't using her blindness to an advantage all the time. Right. I appreciated that.
Right, exactly. It wasn't like, oh, and that's another thing. I got a question, buddy. Like, let's talk about how easy to con she is. Okay, you're a blind lady. You can hear people fucking with the drapes, right? You can hear squeaky shoes from forever ago, but you can't hear the three dudes breathing in your house. Cannot hear that. Not at all. Another thing.
I don't know. How much do you hear people breathing?
All the fucking time, dude.
I also all feel the time. Like there's a lot of like, I feel like there's a lot of, you know, kind people. Of margin for error and a lot of like things that they use, like they cover it up with like, oh, she's recently blind.
Right. So that explains.
So like, she's just learning how to do this stuff.
So Shaggy, there was something that you started to bring up before that I would like to return to, because I feel like there's rich earth there.
Now that you have something for it, I'm ready. What did I hit on?
So you were talking about how they were not an average family.
No.
And no, they weren't. I want to talk about
specifically
in relation to that, the girl upstairs.
Gloria.
Gloria. I want to talk about Gloria as something, again, of an edgy conceit in this film. As, like, I feel like in 1960s, she was topical.
Who was
she
topical?
Was the product of a divorced home, living with her grandma.
Right.
And, like, an abusive father who she sees sometimes.
And a mother who's never there.
But, like, when she throws her tantrum and she's throwing things and Susie, like, after everything's fine and Susie's like, did anything break? She's like, no, I only throw unbreakables. I learned that from Dad.
So flippantly.
But fuck. Like, that's how you know this was a playwright at work, because like shit like that, those little things, those little details don't always make it into movie scripts.
Yeah. Dude.
And when you super do, you're like, oh fuck.
Yeah. Yeah,
but, right. Like, it's just, like, I learned it from Dad is, like, one line that tells you everything about this character. And, like, how much is the fact that these are sort of, like, since you brought up that they're not average,
right.
Like, are these like, is this a Greenwich Village apartment building of misfits, or like, what does that tell us about the setting, do you think?
Well, it's kind of tough, because like, it does call into question the like hippie culture being terrible, because if this is an apartment of misfits, right?
Because there's like, literally just one hippie.
Right. If there's literally a blind lady and like the unwanted child, right, and the photographer man who like for some reason picked up a blind lady and saved her after an accident and then immediately married her because of something that's going
on. She was already blind at that point, right? Like, she was trying to cross the street and he was like, oh, I'll help you. Wasn't that the thing?
But I mean, if they are misfits already and then like other misfits are coming to get them, then that means that it's that level isn't there, right? Like, they're not an average family. Those people aren't coming to get them. I will say this about Gloria, though. I will say that I fucking hated Gloria, and they did it again. Like, I fucking hated Sam, and then all of a sudden they make it kind of okay and make me realize that, oh, he just doesn't realize what he has. He's just an average slep. And then I fucking hated Gloria, and then she just turned around like all of a sudden she's willing to put herself in danger and do everything that she's willing to do. But most kids would. I mean, for some kids fucking love that shit. And then like all of that came about because of Audrey Hepburn. And I realized that Audrey Hepburn's superpower in every role she's given, is to make average people who you would normally dislike into someone that you kind of understand and that it's okay. And I think that's her actual superpower.
Audrey Hepburn is an amazing woman who lived an amazing life and had many superpowers, I just want to say, including like smuggling underground messages under the noses of the Nazis.
Nice.
And did then you know, went on to be a UN ambassador. In her later years. But like, yes, no, she, in any movie that she's in, she is like the glowing warm center. And absolutely. If you guys get a chance to hear Alan Arkin's I watched the special features on the Blu-ray, and you got to see some interviews with Alan Arkin talking about Yeah, Fright Pub. Nice. Alan Arkin had some really marvelous things to say about her in some of these special features interviews, about just like what a wonderful actress she was, and how he's like, everything everybody says about Audrey Hepburn was wonderfully true. Like he said, she is just the best.
That's which even is more surprising.
That's good to hear.
That is good to hear.
Surprising considering what was going on with her during this movie.
Well, because was it her ex-husband who was producing it?
No, it was her current husband at the
time. No, but they divorced like a year later.
Yeah, it was like a real rocky...
Toward the end.
But it was like this movie.
And wasn't she having a miscarriage or something? She was like going through some stuff.
100%. Like she was just came back from a miscarriage. I think two. And then in addition to that, like her husband is producing it. And the whole vibe was like he was a very controlling producer. And then like was very controlling of her in general. And then it just kept getting worse. And this was the last movie they did together. And then directly after this movie, they
Mel Ferrer.
They separated right after this movie. Yeah. And then the divorce happened afterwards. So like, imagine being on set and being like the most wonderful person in the world that everyone thinks, even fucking Alan Arkin, cuckoo bananas, super hammy Alan Arkin decides that he's going to like put like talk about how great Audrey Hepburn is. And she's on all doing this amazing stuff with everybody and being this warm, glowy, nougaty center of this Snickers bar of a movie. And then behind the scenes, you've got this dude who's just like wrecking her life. Wouldn't you beat that guy up? I'd beat that guy up.
Yeah, well, dude, like so much weird shit was happening in Hollywood in the 60s. It's tough to judge from... It's tough to judge from modern lens, but by and large, yes, I'd beat that guy up. Like, fuck that guy. Anybody who hurts Audrey Hepburn is a bad guy in my book.
Right.
Like, you don't get to hurt Audrey Hepburn and be okay. Or at least, at the very least, Lucy, you got some splaining to do.
So, yeah. I mean, for me, in general, like... This movie, grade A thriller, really fun thriller for the 1960s. I really felt at the very beginning I was watching a live action anime until Audrey Hepburn showed up because of how cartoonish these characters were.
I want his knife.
Oh my God.
So good.
This movie is literally just like, it's Sleuth. It's Sleuth with a blind lady. It's
Sleuth if Sleuth wasn't making fun of itself.
Are we sure it wasn't making fun of itself? Did you see not. Alan Arkin's hair?
Alan Arkin's hair in the period was not comic.
Oh, this movie? This movie was not making fun of itself.
No, this movie was 100% sincere and serious, and I love it.
It's so good.
It's a good thriller. I'm not saying it's not. It's not a horror movie. But it's a great
So thing. You watch Alan Arkin's performance and
all 10 feet of it.
Dude, so so this was something interesting that I learned from watching some of his interviews. Nobody knew what he was doing with this character. It was kind of like Jack Sparrow of the
That's
day.
That's because he didn't.
Oh, love it.
He came in and he started doing this first scene, right? And he was doing it like very, very laid back and groovy. And they were like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? Like, this is supposed to be a menacing character. And he was like, when... he pulled the knife on him. He's like, all right, fatso, you go over there. And like, just like turns on them like that. He saw this character as a person who was wound tight, like spring tight on every drug in the book.
Oh.
And then would like spring at you like a snake.
Okay, because see, I thought like the casualness was kind of what made him so menacing.
That's what I think like... too.
It's just, you know, this is day-to-day life. Like, I'm used to doing this. I'm used to killing people to get what I want.
Here's the question. Why would he have just... I beg your pardon. I'm like about a half a bottle into this gin. What was the name of the blonde who got murdered at the beginning?
That was Lisa, wasn't it?
Lisa.
That? Yeah.
Since when can Lisa type?
Right.
So Lisa, why would he just straight up murder Lisa?
I think that was going to happen the whole time.
And not straight up murder Audrey Hepburn. Is it because she was transgressing in this drug culture of like trying to go into business for herself, or like she was trying to smuggle drugs in under his nose, or
Lisa was
yes.
It seems very
I think Lisa fucked up. I mean, I think, you know, like Lisa gave the doll to somebody who then doesn't know where it was. Like, she's useless now.
No, but that wasn't what she did wrong. Bringing the doll in herself was what she did wrong. She gave it to Sam as a defense mechanism.
I guess that's my point. Something.
Like, she's useless. She has no idea where it is because she's not involved in.
But she knew where it was.
She knew it was with him. But at that point, like, she. Okay, so now they know it's with him. So they can. So I think with Audrey, with Susie.
I feel like she was being Audrey punished. Hepburn's
character, Susie.
Okay. The murder was like a punitive measure.
I disagree. And I think here's why. Her job was to get the heroin out of the country she was in, into the country she needed to go to get it to Alan Arkin so that he could distribute it. That's how it was supposed to go. Lucy got through customs, got through everything. The danger is past.
Lisa.
Whatever.
Lisa versus Susie. Yeah, no.
She's dead. Whatever. So she has zero lines. She's it doesn't dead, matter whatever. Who she wrote her name is. Like, I mean, seriously, I don't take your character seriously if you don't have lines. So
she had lines with the old man in the beginning who put the dope in the doll.
You.
What'd she say? Doesn't she matter. Said, don't, it doesn't, yeah,
it
matter.
Doesn't matter. Oh, like, it doesn't matter. Well, no, but it's no, like, no. She, oh, I'm always careful. Like,
they can't be candy bars. Why can't they be candy bars? That would be easier.
Right.
Like she that. Gets, okay. So Lauren she's
watched this most recently.
So either way, she grabs the heroin, stuffs it in the doll, takes the doll, gets through customs on one checkpoint, gets through customs in the next checkpoint, sees Alan Arkin and starts to panic then. Her contact.
That wasn't Alan Arkin, was it?
Yes, it was.
That was Alan Arkin. Was and it? She wasn't supposed to be bringing the drugs in.
That can't be. Okay. Why? If she wasn't supposed to be bringing the drugs in, why did Alan Arkin want the drugs?
She was bringing drugs in to go into business for herself.
No way. You're reading way into this. You've made an entire...
No, I'm not.
You're making this up. There are lines. There's nothing to justify this.
There is. Hang on a second. I'm going to look up some lines right now.
It's your personal interpretation.
This is good because I have to be honest. I actually watched the first 20 minutes or so of this movie twice because I was like, I feel like I'm missing something. I feel like I'm missing something.
Here's what's actually going on.
I got a little bit more in the second watch, but I don't feel like I
no,
got it
because
all.
What he said, what did Rote say to them when to Richard Crenna and other dude? When they
so Mike
found
and Carlino.
Mike and Carlino. When Lisa was found dead, and she was like going into business for herself. Bad news. Like she was trying to smuggle drugs in to sell drugs for herself, keep the money on Rote's watch. Like
so she
on
was trying to
she
steal
was cutting
Rote's
into
drugs.
His business.
Okay.
So I feel like that's why she was killed.
Okay.
Was because she was cutting into his business. But but I don't know. It seemed like when he finally got around to being like, I'm going to kill you, Susie. It felt more personal.
Oh yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah, I gotta be. I did not get that. But I also, like I said already, I watched the first 20 minutes a couple of times because I was like, I feel like I'm missing something, and that's very quite possibly because I just thought that they couldn't use Lisa anymore. But no, that makes a lot more sense. And I do feel like that's why they don't kill Susie to begin with, is because I do feel like they need her, because she's the one that can hopefully get them this doll. But
so with the scarf that he tortures her with.
Yes.
Is that coded language for 1960s?
Oh, I don't know.
That he is going to be raping her.
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, they kind of say it more like, they say it more bluntly later, but like, is that how he killed Lisa? Is that just she doesn't know what that feeling is? Is that an added perversion to it that like he's torturing her with a silk scarf?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't read anything into it as far as like, I didn't read anything sexual into it, but I don't tend to
read sexual. I read sexual into everything.
Not to say that it, like, I don't usually go there for whatever reason. I remember like being, when I was watching it last night, like being like, oh yeah, that would be a really weird feeling because it's like kind of.
It would be, but it takes you out of that comfort zone. Like, yeah. It's not a bad feeling, but it is in this context.
Yeah. I wish I could remember exactly what
isn't that sort of rape in a nutshell? Like, this is something that people do for pleasure, but, like, not now. Not like this. This isn't how I wanted this.
Yeah. I wish I could remember what I was thinking about when I saw it last night, because I remember being like, oh, that's weird. And then being like, oh no, that makes sense.
And now, like, I don't know if I'm reading too much into that, but it's like, it just tracks so well with everything else the character is doing that like, it worked for me so well as a character. Like, he knows what buttons to push. And this is when I go back to saying that, like, not only is it a well-written character, but it's also performed brilliantly, I think, by Alan Arkin. That he just knows that that's where to go with her. And it tracks with the fact that he plans on raping her before he kills her.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I do see that, for sure. I'm gonna take over for a little bit here because I have some stuff to say. I have some feelings here.
You have the floor.
Thank you. So this is my kind of movie. Like, the thriller genre is my kind of scary movie. I love it so much. Little sidebar, love Audrey Hepburn's accent. It's so, just wonderful. But I did have some problems, and probably most of my issues were that it is in the 60s as opposed to today. But I think my biggest issue with the whole thing is that she is such a strong woman and has such weak moments that drive me bananas. And I don't know if that's part of the way that things were made in 67, like
the 60s.
Like, maybe it was a part of like maybe it was like a melodrama type thing, or it came across to me as very melodramatic. But that was probably the thing. I don't know. But
can I have an example?
That was my big problem, was like, and maybe it I'm sure it probably is part of the times, is that like she would be this strong woman who would have so many wonderful and brilliant ideas, and then like the telephone wire would be cut out and she'd like lose her shit.
I think that particular moment that you're talking about, I think that was the melodrama of the time. I don't think that was meant to be a comment on her independence as a woman. Now,
I get that.
Here's, so it's, I wasn't alive in 1967. It's tough for me to put myself back in that moment.
Right.
But I want to talk a little bit about her neighbor going on the skiing trip or whatever he was doing. The one where she's taking the garbage out. And he tries to help her and she's like, just don't tell Sam that you helped me.
Yes. Well, that was very much Sam's.
That's where I really didn't like Sam.
Yeah.
Like when you have to tell somebody else not to tell your significant other something that that person did for you, not because you think that person would get in trouble, but you'd get in trouble for letting them help.
Yeah.
That's an abusive relationship.
That's an abusive relationship.
I don't care what decade you're in anymore.
You don't know why she asked him not to say anything.
Yes, I do. Because okay, Sam why? Would yell at her for accepting the help. Because she is the world's champion blind lady.
Yell at her like beat her? Yell at her like just be abusive in general?
No, emotionally abusive. She is in an emotionally abusive relationship with Sam.
And the bitch of it is that he thinks he's helping her the whole time.
So here's the question.
I don't know how we went from this guy Richard an Crenna, average guy to this dude is an abuser this quickly.
I'll tell you how. Is Richard Crenna set up in the script? Mike Tallman, is he set up in the script as a counterpoint to Sam as to the kind of guy that she should be with?
I do agree with that. But yeah, no, I wanted to comment a little bit on that relationship with Sam, like Sam's relationship with Susie, and the whole blindness thing. It is very interesting because he almost, in my observation of it, like I feel like he treats her like if he had known her when she had her vision, I feel like it might be a little more acceptable.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, right, does that make sense?
Yes.
Because, like, the fact of the matter is that he met her after she had her accident, after she was blind, and he's treating her like she just needs to, like, pick herself up by her bootstraps and fucking deal. And I don't know. I just...
Which, can we just say for a second that picking yourself up by the bootstraps was a satirical statement when it was coined?
Oh, interesting.
It was meant to be something that, like, nobody can physically do.
That's true.
That was the point of it. And suddenly it just became this popular mainstream parlance as being like, oh, American individualism. But, like, no, it was satire, and you motherfuckers are playing into it. But yeah, no, Sam buys into that so hard. He's like, yes, you have to be world champions, blind lady. I also just want to throw into like a little side thing while we're talking about all of the people in this apartment complex that don't fit in with the rest of society. Ski trip neighbor might be coded as gay or foreign or both.
Oh, I absolutely got gay.
Yeah.
I definitely got gay.
One of those two, at least, probably both foreign and gay. But, like, they live in, like, the most accepting apartment building, but yet the hippies with the drugs are still the problem.
That's a good point.
Shaggy's left us by now. I don't know where Shaggy is.
I mean,
if we're not in the same basement, I can't tell where he's at.
All right, so I'm still here. Okay. I just want to say, I gotta go. Right, I gotta bail.
No,
you can't go yet. We're zeroing in.
I literally have to go.
We're wrapping up.
Okay, geez, that's why. That's why I'm wrapping it up. Right, so
we had technical issues.
We had some technical. Yeah, give us 10 minutes.
Just shut up. So I'm going to wrap it up for you right now. So this movie.
Can we talk about Henry Mancini before you do?
No, I gotta go.
Pittsburgh's own Henry Mancini did the score.
No way! Best part. That's awesome.
Good job.
Audrey Hepburn loved Henry Mancini since Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yes.
And he did all of the music for her movies after that. He was great. She loved him. I love him. And his score kicked ass with both feet.
Okay, so let's vote.
Okay, so what do we want to call a thriller? What is a thriller rating? I concede to the majority that it is a thriller, not a horror.
It is a thriller.
What do we want to call a thriller?
How many Michael Jacksons?
Ooh. No. Ooh. I give this shit 4.5 Michael Jacksons.
Really? We're gonna go with Michael Jacksons? I don't care. Whatever gets us all in here and out.
Fuck it. Thriller.
All right. We're going to have to rethink this, though, because the thriller is my favorite genre of this.
They all get child rapist Michael Jacksons, allegedly.
No, we're going to have to revisit this. But, okay, for me, it's 4.
Okay,
cool. I give it a 4. What do you say, Shag?
4. Same. 4.
4? So we're at a
4.3.
3?
We can say 2.5.
Yeah, it's a little less than 2.5 because it's 2.4 and a 4.5. So like a 4.18 something. I don't know. You did a thing in our first episode that I'd like to bring back. What worked for you? What didn't work for you?
As a thriller,
best part, worst part.
Best part was Audrey Hepburn's relationships with Gloria and Audrey Hepburn's relationships with Sam. Like those building on those and like letting me see that world and like letting me see the nuances and the three dimensions there. The worst parts for me were the various costume changes of Alan Arkin. Why does he wear a costume change if she can't fucking see him? I don't understand. Why does he need to wear a wig?
I understand that.
She can't see him.
That.
He doesn't need to wear a wig. What's going on here?
I just think that his costume changes weren't for her, but they were for any potential external witnesses.
Okay. Well, it didn't work for me because I didn't.
That's
there was
fair.
A lot. There was a lot.
100% fair. That is a valid complaint.
Thank you. It didn't work for me. I don't.
I love you.
Thank you.
And I think that your balls are beautiful.
No,
they can be cupped in the right hand or the left hand.
Liam?
And each hand is a different kind of feeling, which is great.
Okay.
All right.
I feel like I'm infringing on a private moment. But anyway, the total, the average. Okay. So this one gets a 4.17 is the average.
Okay, Lauren, what worked for you? What didn't work for you?
So what worked for me? What didn't work for me? Okay. Oh no, I did want to bring up one more thing before we stop. So I really liked this movie.
I am so glad
really good for me. I really enjoyed it. A thriller is my cup of tea here.
Because
in this
I
world.
Love this movie from my youth.
It's really good.
And it's so good. And it's one of those that, like, you want to show to your children.
Yeah. Oh, Kylan's like, asking about it.
When
sure.
they're, like,
I was trying
old
to
enough.
It to
and you're like, yeah. When will you appreciate the fear? Like, when are you old
right.
enough to be afraid of things that people should be afraid of, but you're not afraid of yet?
For sure.
Ugh.
So, yeah, I love that. I thought it was really well written for the most part. I thought it was just, like, it was so original, I thought.
Them Topsy, them me Topsy, and them Turvy. I love that line so much.
So I thought it was really well written. I thought it was really well done. My issues with it did come mostly from like a feminist perspective of like I felt like she was so strong and so like just very creative in her ways of attacking the situation. But then the moments of like melodrama really got to me. Like, and also I feel I audibly laughed and I knew I wasn't supposed to, but like, this is the part that I wanted to bring up that I forgot to, when Alan Arkin is trying to kill her and it's just like, he launches himself and there's the stinger and it's just like, he's in the air. And it was just like, that doesn't translate anymore. That doesn't. See,
that still works for me. Maybe from when I was 11.
Probably because it kind of digs up those motions.
That is the best jump scare I can remember
the jump scares did not get me, and maybe it was because I don't kind of have that nostalgia about it. The jump scares in this movie did not get me.
That creeped into my heart and just like gave me a small heart attack again upon seeing it. Because I haven't watched this movie in 15 years. I haven't watched this movie since I probably watched it with Shaggy, freshman year of college,
15 years ago,
which was on VHS. Anyway. So
what about you? Your turn.
So here's a couple of things.
What worked? What didn't?
I want to touch on some things with you.
Okay.
Individually, because of the feminist perspective that you're bringing to it.
I am. Yeah. I'm surprised.
Are you?
I kind of am. I never really.
So do you feel like you're a staunch feminist?
I don't, but I think I never have, I should say. I never have felt that I have been. But I actually do think I am and proud of it.
Do you feel more like a staunch feminist watching these horror movies from different time periods than you did previous to this?
I guess I do. Because it's very interesting. I think I never really like had a take on it. Like I know what I like. I know what's important to me. And I never really put a label on it before, but the more that I like kind of come at it from the same perspective and maybe like in doing this podcast, I'm discovering, I'm kind of like a putting my opinions to a voice. And I'm finding that, yeah, I am, I guess I am, I guess that is. And it's not that I regarded any of it like, badly. I just never really thought about it. I think I probably am. Like I support strong women. I think it's great to be a strong woman. I feel like I am a strong woman, and so like looking at these movies just to be like I'm liking when strong women are
depicted
exactly, thank you, and getting frustrated when they show weakness, a weakness that I feel like is not progressive or crucial to the story really.
So the moment when Susie breaks down a little bit because the telephone line has been cut.
Yes.
Do you feel like that was out of character, or do you feel like that was in character?
I feel like it was out of character. I feel like most of her breakdowns were, but I think that part of my opinion of that and part of my reasoning for feeling that that was out of character is because not that like in the way that women are depicted today, they would have had those thoughts. They just probably would have expressed them differently. Like, I feel like if I were watching that movie, so for example, and actually I did put this on the list, but something very similar to this movie is a movie called Hush, which is on Netflix, which is it's a very similar premise. Well, not very similar, but it is similar in the fact that the woman who is the protagonist of Hush is deaf as opposed to blind. And so gotcha. It's the same. It's kind of like the same overcoming those obstacles. Very good movie. I did put it on the list, so hopefully we will watch it at some point. But anyway, so using that kind of as a comparison, not that she wouldn't be faced with those obstacles, or that she would find them as frustrating or a deterrence, but that you just, women, the way that women are depicted for the most part today that I approve of, that I like and that I appreciate and that I relate to, is that it's a much more internal struggle. It's less outward, less external. And so like if that feeling were conveyed today, it probably would be like with like either a groan or like something in the eyes or something that you could feel the internal conflict, but it wasn't so outward.
So do you feel like that's a failing of the cinematic storytelling of the time?
I guess I do. Yes. But at the same time, yeah, I feel like I get that was the way that things were depicted then. But I feel like a lot of the movie holds up. I feel like that one element does not.
No, that's fair. And I'm just looking right now. The play was written by a Frederick Knott, and mm-hmm. the screenplay was written by Robert Carrington.
And with a woman, right? There was also though.
Was there a woman
like,
who was involved?
I feel like it was co-authored with the movie.
One more credit. Let's see here. Screenplay: Robert Carrington with Jane Howard Hammerstein.
Yeah. Yes.
According to IMDb. So
no, that was actually on. I noticed that in the opening credits of the movie.
So the thing that didn't work for me is Susie's relationship with Sam.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it for sure.
That really didn't work for me a lot. And maybe it's my modern progressive idea about what relationships are supposed to be like. And uh-huh. that it's like, what do I have to be world champion blind lady? The yes. answer is like, dude, you don't have to be anything except that you are.
Right.
Everything that you are is good enough.
And I think I would have been okay with
answer.
It. Like, yeah.
But I need you to make sure that you're holding yourself to the correct standard. And
yeah,
I mean, maybe this is putting too much importance on me, but I think you're the world champion's blind lady. So
right.
if you think you are the world champion's blind lady, then here are the things we need to work on. And I want you to be the best person that you can be. And if that person that you can be is blind and you think you're the best blind person, then fuck it. Let's go for it. Let's do it. Let's go. Let's take you. Let's talk about it. Where are you at in relation to where you think you should be as a blind lady? Fuck it. Let's put it in those terms and we'll talk about it and we'll take you. So like, okay. So let's say you're like down here and maybe like up to here is the medium. That's like bare minimum for a blind lady, but you want to be better than a blind lady. Where's like way up here? Where's way up here? Where do you want to be as a blind lady? And that is where I will work to get you to fucking be as a blind lady. And if you want to be world champions blind lady, then I want you to be that and I will help you to be that, but you have to know that I'm gonna be a little bit of a dick about it.
Right,
like, does that make sense? That's so much better than like, I expect you to be world champions blind lady. I don't give a shit what you want. Like, what is that?
appreciate, but I can appreciate, like, if they didn't feel like they had the time to establish that, that's fine. However, I feel like they kind of missed something in the beginning. So they had the beginning relationship. That's fine. But then we discover, like, all these ways that she, like, literally is the world champion blind lady. Like, holy fuck.
Sure, but here's the thing.
And then at the end, you still get the, oh, Sam! And it's just like, no, Sam, no,
walk to me, walk to me, come to me, Susie,
seriously,
please walk forward to me. Like, that's what really didn't work for me. Is so here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing that didn't work for me. You set up Sam, right? As kind of a dick, but maybe he's got her best interests at heart. And then at the end, he's kind of a dick, but he's got her best interests at heart. And it's like, walk to me, Susie, please. Walk to me. Dude, and then they embrace. But then in between endpoint Sam and beginning point Sam, Sam doesn't need to change. But what have we seen? We have seen
so much of her changing.
We have seen Mike Tallman, who has not only encountered her as an emotional equal, but an intellectual equal, and has dubbed her world's champion blind lady.
Yeah.
Oh, you're that. You're that, all right.
Yeah.
Line from the movie. Right?
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like at the end, it's almost like Sam takes her fucking thunder. It's like she's the hero of this movie. And at the end, she's like,
Hero of the movie. But then she's relegated to a fucking supporting character because. Right.
That's where I'm at. Yes.
So then you have Rote. Who actually puts her through her paces. So, like, Mike Tallman is where Sam should be.
Yes.
Right? Mike Tallman is the ideal. Rote is what Sam is actually asking for. Rote needs to be outdone. And the consequence for now not outsmarting Rote is that you're going to be raped and you're going to be choked to death while he's raping you. And if you can't meet those standards, you're going to die. While being violated by a man. And she beats him.
Yes.
She stabs him in the stomach. She threatens him with fire. With external combustion. He is alive for the last 30 minutes of this movie because she has not set his motherfucking ass on literal fire.
Right?
And he gets her one last time with that fucking fridge.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So good. Jesus. That's so good. The best holy shit moment in cinema that I can think of. So the lunge at her with the knife worked for me.
Yes.
It worked for me when I was 11. It worked for me when I showed this to Shaggy freshman year. It worked for me now. It is the 100% best jump scare of all time. Everything else has to be compared to that, or it ain't worth the steam off my piss. That is the one. But when he opens the fridge and she shattered every light bulb except the light bulb in the fridge, and right. he thought of that and she didn't, that is the moment they are equals.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that's yeah. the moment where he's like, okay, I tried to murder you and rape you. You stabbed me. I tried to crawl to you with a butcher knife. Whatever. You tried to get away, but woohoo, I locked the door in a way that you can't undo. All of that is subsequent to this.
Finally. Do you think there's a little like, should have done what Sam told you to, though, to it? Where it's like,
there is a little bit, which sucks.
Right? Which
like,
sucks.
Well, sort of, but like, it's just the one thing that she, well, so, even if she did what Sam told her to, I feel like Sam telling her to do it that way was more a point of, drawing attention to the fridge.
Okay.
In a stage play.
Okay.
That was Chekhov's gun.
Yeah.
Is that you hang the gun over the mantelpiece in the first act, and it's going to get fired in the third act. Talking about the fridge and how you should defrost it in the first act. Finally, you get the importance of the fridge in the third act.
Okay, I hope you're right.
To me.
I like that.
Anyway, I don't know that if makes that's sense. One. I don't know if that's like, oh, you should have done what Sam told you.
I'm going to go with that because I like it better.
But it's, it is important that that is the one thing that she didn't think of.
Yeah.
And wrote did. And then she just knew that that was it. She was like, oh, shit, 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 shit.
Right.
But it was after that that the jump scare happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because after that, and this is a filmmaking thing, all of the light comes from that fridge. So, you have Sam, who is set up as the husband.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he sets this expectation for Susie. And then you have Mike Tallman, who comes in as a counterpoint to Sam.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As the emotional person that Susie really ought to be with.
Mm-hmm.
In the word of the story, right? Like, am I
right?
Incorrect?
No, you're absolutely right. No, you're absolutely right. They definitely romanticize that relationship for sure.
They do a bit, right? Like, where mm-hmm. Susie is like, he's like, oh man, like you got us called. Like, don't worry about Rote's dead in a parking lot.
Right, and that's called this from the beginning. He definitely has an affinity toward her, and he definitely like
because he knew what Sam had.
Right, exactly, and you could see him kind of, you could watch the shift and him warming up to her and actually like appreciating who she was, and starting to want to like work with her rather than against her.
And you know where the moment was. Was when she asked him, she was like, is this place dusty?
Oh.
He was like, no, why?
Because
the police officer, he was dusting everything. He was wiping everything down.
Right. Okay, that's earlier than I would have pegged it. But
no, that was the first inkling, I feel like, he got that he was like,
okay,
what the fuck? That was when he knew who he was dealing with.
Right.
He might have not have fallen in love with her in that moment, but that's when he was like, this is not the job that we had signed on for.
Yeah. Oh, you're not as simple as I pegged you.
We're not just conning a blind woman. We're conning a world champion blind woman.
Right.
And by the time Mike Tallman dies, he has the appreciation for her that Sam should have had from the beginning.
Right.
But he doesn't because he's a fucking dick. Then you have Rote, who is, and not in a good way, but Rote is her actual intellectual equal. Like, that's a fair match.
Susie
without her eyes. Like, Susie's so good that she has to be blind to be an intellectual equal for Rote.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, she ends up with Sam. And it pisses me off so much. That's not a comfort to me. This was not a happy ending.
Oh.
This was a tragedy.
Yeah.
Sam's not going to kill her. He's not going to rape her and strangle her in the bedroom.
Right.
But like, at the end of this, she knows what she's capable of.
Does she though? See, I don't know if I get that. I don't know if I get that. I know. She fucking
murdered a man in her apartment who was trying to kill her.
I know that we know what she's capable of, and that she's incredibly strong, and you know, and can do all those things. But at the end, when she does the Sam, it's just like, oh,
that's
fuck.
Because okay. there is a abusiveness of the relationship. Where he is the power and she has none.
Yeah.
Where she isn't worth anything without Sam.
Uh-huh.
To me, anyway. Like, I could just be pulling, like, worlds of 2020 shit into this 1967 film.
I feel like that's where I am, though, too. That's what we have to
Like... But at the same time, I don't feel like I'm pulling things that aren't in this movie. You know, like, she met her emotional equal, she met her intellectual equal, and she beat the dog shit out of both of them. But as soon as Sam shows up, she's like, Sam, right? I can walk to you. Walk to me, Susie. I can walk to you. Like, what the fuck is that? What kind of, like, 1967 housewife bullshit is that trying to reinforce? Right.
Thank you. Yep. Yeah.
Maybe I'm reading too much into it. Maybe I'm bringing too modern a perspective into an old-ass movie, and I love old-ass movies.
But it's hard to feel that when you have just... It's like you see... Everything you said is there. Like, you see her strengths. You see her meeting her emotional match. You see her meeting her intellectual match. It's like, how can they do all that? How can they... How can that have been all curated if they didn't see that? Like, if
it's
it
like
wasn't
Sam is as much fact. Sam is as much a match for her as Carlino.
Right.
Like, you erase those two fucks from the movie, and they have
no big deal.
You have the exact same
movie
emotional arc.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, I don't know, man. I just, like, they had to know what they were putting into this.
That's a really good point that I had never thought of before, but that's so true. It's like, if they know enough, because I always just was like, until now, I was just thinking, oh, well, it's just my modern take of it. But it's like, no, they knew, like, the people who made this movie, the people who wrote this this screenplay, they knew what they were doing because they did it. And then, yeah, that's very interesting to think of that way.
But yeah, so I guess, I mean, in that's a really, really, really long way of saying that the thing that didn't work for me was Sam and Susie as a couple. Even trying to put myself back in 1967 when men were men? Like, here's a question. Like, when was the last time you saw a career photographer depicted in a movie?
I don't know.
I can tell you the last time I saw one depicted in a movie was Lost in Translation.
Okay. Which was what? 2001? One? Okay.
2002? 2003, okay. Maybe? Let's IMDb this shit right now. IMDb, where are you, IMDb? Lost? 2003. So, Scarlett Johansson's emasculated hipster hanging on to the rock life husband in Lost in Translation is the next time after Wait Until Dark that I remember a photographer husband being a character in a movie. There are probably others.
I'm sure but there are. Those are
probably two peaks, right? What other movies came out in 1967? Can you tell me?
No.
Let's do a I quick look.
I can look it up. There. Graduate.
The Graduate, In the Heat of the Night. Cool Hand Luke. Guess who's coming to dinner?
Oh, The Jungle Book?
The Jungle Book.
Barefoot in the Park.
You know, You Only Live Twice. Casino Royale, the first one. If you were going to guess.
Producers.
If you were going to guess the least progressive film of 1967, would you have guessed Wait Until Dark?
The least progressive? No, not at all.
I mean, this is The Dirty Dozen, Valley of the Dolls, The Graduate, In the Heat of the Night, and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, not to mention Cool Hand Luke, zeitgeist films across the board. I don't want to talk too much shit, except I do. But I'm just saying, at this point, maybe Wait Until Dark was already out of touch.
Fascinating.
And if it weren't a thriller with some great jump scares and some amazing gasp moments, when he opens that fridge door, your heart drops down to your stomach. Is that incorrect? You just watched this for the first time the other day.
Yes.
Were you surprised when he opened the fridge?
I guess, like, I hadn't thought of it. Like, it's not something that I predicted. But okay. To say I was surprised, I don't know if I was surprised. It was more of like, it's like, oh man. So I guess in a way I was surprised. Like I didn't see it coming. But then when it happened, I was like, oh, of course.
It's just like this. You know
what I mean? It was very, yes. It was very much that.
So that's what I'm saying. Yes. Is that like that moment for me? The jump when he jumps out at her with a knife.
Yeah, holy I just shit. Thought that was so cliche. See, I thought it was so cliche.
That hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm not gonna lie.
And I think honestly, I've been hey, reading up on it. Listen I think this. I'm in the minority here.
Listen to this.
Yeah.
You hear that?
Yes, I did.
That's Ginzer.
But I thought it was empty. Did you open a new one?
Glug, 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 glug. Dude, that jump. How did you not feel that?
I found it so cliche. I found it so cliche.
But would you have in 1967?
I don't think so. Yeah, no, so, I agree. I think
so
it was,
where are... So you've watched a lot of horror movies, right?
Yes, yes.
What are...
A lot of contemporary, I should say. A lot of contemporary horror movies.
Right. So what are... Do you see any lines to be drawn? Like in your... In the meme... Where you have the guy from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where he's like mm-hmm. drawing all the yarn lines across the map.
Right.
You know the meme yes. I'm talking about?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Where would you draw lines from that jump scare to modern day horror?
Oh, see, I don't think it's
Or is like... that like the Nexus and like everything else is just like spawning from that?
And I don't feel that. I don't know. I felt like it was incredibly.
So you felt it was cliche.
I felt it was cliche. Yes.
But without a modern reference to draw that distinction from. Oh,
I see. Yeah. No, I felt it was. Yeah. No, I think it was. What's the best way to. I felt like it was spoofy. I felt like it was spoofy. I'm not going to lie. Like
so much gin right now. There is just not an excuse.
I felt like it was spoofy. I felt like it was something that you would see not in necessarily a contemporary horror film. I feel like it was something that you would see in like a scary movie spoof.
Because I'll tell you. And this is apocryphal mm-hmm. to my parents' generation, like my parents telling me about this. But also when you go on to the special features interviews of the Blu-ray, it actually tracks. Where like my parents were like, oh, that moment was like a thing. No, if you listen to, like, you know, Alan Arkin on the special features interviews of the Blu-ray, he talks about, like, hearing people in the theater when that jump happened, and everybody was just startled to fuck. Like, is this a her moment? Yeah. Is this
a review about from Ebert, too, that was a thing. I just did not find it scary at all. So I guess we already voted, so I guess we're gonna end on that probably.
Thank you very much for joining us for Fright Pub. Yeah. Thank you for this edition of Fright Pub, your intoxicated movie podcast, and pour a drink. And just pretend the rest of the world is not existing.
For sure.
Until the next time.
Which hopefully will be next been week if we can Liam Maverick. All right.
And Lauren Connolly has been Lauren Connolly. And Shaggy, although he's missed so much of this. What a bitch. Welcome to Fright Pub, and we will see you next time.
Good night from Fright Pub.
Hang on, I'm drunk.